Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. In Module 1 of this podcast, two experts in gastrointestinal oncology, Dr. Juan Manuel O'Connor from Argentina and Professor Dr. Francesco Sclafani from Belgium, respond to questions from the colorectal cancer community. The questions cover identifying patients for biomarker-targeted treatment in colorectal cancer, the current treatment landscape, and anti-EGFR rechallenge in the treatment of colorectal cancer. This activity is supported by an independent medical education grant from the healthcare business of Merck, KGaA, Darmstadt, Germany, and is jointly provided by USF Health and Touch IME.
Hello, and welcome to this Touching in Conversation activity. My name is Francesco Sclafani. I'm a consultant medical oncologist at the Institut Jean Bordet in Brussels, Belgium. I'm joined today by my esteemed colleague, Dr. Juan Manuel O'Connor, who is head of the Department of Gastrointestinal Tumors at the Alexander Fleming Institute in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Together, we will be exploring biomarker-targeted approach to support precision medicine in the management of colorectal cancer. So let's start our first section by talking about how to identify patients for biomarker-targeted treatment in colorectal cancer. It's not clear that colorectal cancer is quite a heterogeneous disease. In clinical practice, we use a number of different clinical or molecular biomarkers to make our treatment decisions. There are some established biomarkers, like, for instance, tumor sidedness, so left versus right, alteration of the MAP kinase pathway, KRAS and RAS BRAF mutations, of course, microsatellite instability or mismatch repair proficiency, HER2 amplification, and NTRK fusions. So, Juan, let's take a look at some questions submitted by our audience on the role of biomarkers in identifying patients with colorectal cancer who might benefit from targeted therapy. The first question is this: when I'm scheduling biomarker evaluation for a patient diagnosed with colorectal cancer, what tests should I include and when? Are there any special testing requirements to consider and discuss with my pathology and molecular biology colleagues and even with patients? Can you tell me more about the current role of liquid biopsies?
Yes, thanks, Francesco. I think very important question. When I try to define the first line treatment for our patient, I would say the most important biomarker is the full RAS, RAS and MIRAS, for example, and also the microsatellite status. Because, you know, there are some new data in terms of the activity of the immunotherapy for this subtype of population with MSI-high or microsatellite instability. This is a subgroup of patients with 4 to 5%, so it's very important to take in account this testing MMR status to give our patient the best option in terms of immunotherapy. So this is the key point in order to looking for the biomarkers. And also in terms of the liquid biopsy, there are new data just to define the patients with MRD, minimal residual disease. We are looking at some clinical trials in localized disease. I think there is some very good data in terms of validation of this technique, but we need to move to the study of the validity and utility of this tool for the future in our patients. What do you think about this, Francesco?
Well, I think you raised some very good points. I mean, first of all, I would say that liquid biopsy is not available everywhere. And then, as you mentioned, there are still some problems in terms of standardization of the assays. So we have different assays available. So we do not know yet which one to use in clinical situations. So it was asked, I would like some guidance on how to interpret biomarker status in my patients with colorectal cancer. How can I use biomarker test results to guide my clinical decision making? What other factors should I consider to guide my treatment choice?
This is an interesting question and very important, because I think that also important, not only the biomarker, is how is our patient, how is the clinical condition, how is the status of the disease, is it a bulky disease, very symptomatic or not symptomatic. So probably this is a challenge for the physician, the treating physician, in order to better define the first line treatment. Personally, I think that the first line treatment is very important for our patient because the overall response rate and also the median PFS and overall survival is better with this first line treatment.
So Juan, are there any particular data about the predictive and prognostic role of molecular biomarkers in colorectal cancer?
Yes, sure, Francesco. I think the role of the predictive value of the SAM biomarker is very important, at least for advanced disease, because the MMR status is a predictive factor for the use of immunotherapy. That was the group of patients including in the phase 3 trial for the first-line immunotherapy. And also, you know, there was very good information and relevant information in terms of the negative predictive value of the RAS mutation in EGFR inhibitor. So I think that it's very important when I had to decide the best treatment for our patient. Important to remark in terms of the prognostic factor, for example, in localized disease, there are some data that show the KRAS, NRAS, and also BRAS mutant are the prognostic factor for localized disease. There are very good data from the pool analysis in the AXIOM IDEA that show for MS stable disease, so microsatellite stable disease patient with in better prognosis in terms of the different molecular profile, the KRAS, for example, or NRAS mutation, or BRAF in terms of time to recurrence, progression-free survival, and also overall survival. So these factors are important also in this population with the localized disease as a prognostic factors, not only as a predictive factor that I mentioned before in advanced disease, Francesco.
Let's now move on to the second section of this module, which is about current colorectal cancer treatment landscape. So as we have mentioned, there are a number of different biomarkers that we can routinely test now in clinical practice for our patients. And what is really important is that some of these biomarkers are actually good actionable biomarkers, so are interesting therapeutic targets. So it's really key to test our patients as soon as possible, because all the international guidelines really recommend to use in the frontline setting treatment which are based on the molecular profile of those tumors. So this is true for first line setting, but then also we know that even in the second line and third line setting, we can still use the biomarker testing results to make our treatment decisions. So Juan, let's take a look at some questions again submitted by our audience regarding the current treatment landscape in colorectal cancer. The first question is this. In addition to targeted therapies, immune checkpoint inhibitors have recently emerged as an important treatment option for patients with MSI-high colorectal cancer. How do you talk to your patients about immunotherapy, and what data do you use to support this conversation?
Yes, interesting in terms of the activity and the new evidence for immunotherapy in colorectal cancer, Francesco. I think we have now two important clinical trials, phase 3 clinical trials that show the activity of immunotherapy comparing with the standard of care, chemo plus minus biological agent. In the KEYNOTE-177, for example, that was reached the primary endpoint in terms of the median PFS, some 16 months for the immunotherapy arm compared with the 8 months for the standard of care treatment. So this is a very impressive data at the first time guiding by biomarker, because this population was MSI high patients, and the very promising results in terms with activity of immunotherapy with pembrolizumab, and also clinically significant differences in terms of overall survival. Recently, Francesco, new data in terms of the combination of immunotherapy based on the CheckMate HHW was presented recently in the ASCO GI 2024, and they shows the very good activity for the combination, nivolumab plus ipilimumab, and the impressive reduction of the hazard ratio, 79%, with the use of the combination of immunotherapy for this population, metastatic disease, and MSI-high patients.
So Juan, we have got another question from the audience regarding these sections. The question is this, I have several patients with BRAF mutated metastatic colorectal cancer who have progressed on first-line chemotherapy, where I have considered targeted therapy with encorafenib plus cetuximab. However, for many patients, it can be challenging to understand what to expect from biomarker-targeted therapies. How can I use the latest evidence to help them understand the potential benefits and risk of treatment?
Yeah, Francesco, the BRAF V600E mutant patient is a bad or the worst prognostic factor for our patient with advanced disease, mainly for a patient with microsatellite stable disease. New data coming from the Beacon trial shows the activity of the targeted therapy for this subtype of population after progressive disease with chemotherapy plus minus antiangiogenic, for example, as a first line for this kind of patient. The Beacon trial showed the activity and the median overall survival for 9 months for the combination compared with the control arm that was 5.9 months. And also better results in terms of the median PFS with the encorafenib and cetuximab. Maybe one the open question is what is the role of the triplet if the adding binimetinib it's increased or not the outcome with the combination. But now we are we know that the doublet combination is the best option in terms of the targeted therapy for this population in the second on third line.
So one, of course, we know that sometimes patients have limited knowledge about the treatment options. So how do you generally use the latest evidence to help patients understand the potential risk and benefit from such treatments?
Yeah, in terms of the control of our patients, I try to communicate clearly in terms of the how to avoid some toxicity for the new treatment and targeted therapy, and also with the medical team. I think that the key point here is the communication and also the some educational resources for our patient and monitoring closely after initiating the treatment with the targeted therapy in this setting.
Thank you, Juan. So let's move now to the last section of this activity, and where we will be discussing about some data about the anti-GFR rechallenge in patients with metastatic colorectal cancer. As we said earlier on, we prefer starting treatment with chemotherapy plus anti-GFR monoclonal antibodies, at least for our patients with left-sided RAS-BRAF wild-type tumors. But what we now know is that a tumor may evolve at the genomic level. If we treat our patients with anti-GFR agents, we actually induce some proliferation of pre-existing or development of new treatment-resistant mutant clones, which are then responsible for the resistance to anti-GFR inhibition. But then if we withdraw the selective pressure from anti-GFR-based treatment, then the tumor can still evolve. And actually what we can see is a reduction in the proportion of resistant clones. And therefore, after an anti-GFR treatment holiday, patients can potentially become again sensitive to anti-GFR inhibition. And actually, there are now a number of studies which have tested anti-GFR rechallenge in third or later lines of treatment. And all these studies consistently showed that there is, I would say, a reasonably high proportion of patients who can still respond to either cetuximab or panitumumab. So, Juan, let's take again a look at some of the questions which were submitted by our audience. So the first question is this. I see many patients who initially respond well to first-line anti-GFR-based therapy, such as cetuximab or panitumumab, but subsequently, these patients develop resistance. Can these patients benefit again from anti-GFR rechallenge?
Understanding the concept of the dynamic changes, biological changes after pressure of the treatment, it's one important concept just to define the different option for our patients. For example, that was mentioned before, the changes in the resistant clones in the same tumor, and also how to sensitize this tumor in a new option, for example, in the rechallenge with EGFR plus minus chemotherapy.
So I suppose the question is now, how can we best select these patients? Is there any evidence that can help us making our treatment decision and identify those patients who can really benefit from anti-GFR inhibition as a rechallenge treatment?
I think the use of liquid biopsy is a very good tool for classify our patient, is they are good candidate or not for rechallenge treatment. But also, there are some data in terms of the benefit of rechallenge with the use of the EGFR. For example, there are some single center study with the that testing the anti-EGFR re-exposure and reintroduction. This is important to remark the differences between rechallenge, the true rechallenge for our patient, and reintroduction, if the patient has or not a progressive disease during the treatment with the EGFR. The data coming from this real-world study shows the very impressive the median overall survival, more than 60 or 50 months for a patient with refractory disease, and that persisting with the RAS wild type. So I think that the real-world data shows activity not only the randomized clinical trial in this setting. I would like to know, Francesco, in your clinical practice, how do you plan the treatment for your patient with metastatic disease?
Well, I think in the frontline setting, whenever I have patients who receive anti-GFR-based treatment, I generally, after 4 months of therapy, I tend to de-escalate treatment. So I drop either oxaliplatin or irinotecan and continue with 5-FU plus either cetuximab or panitumumab until progression or unacceptable toxicity or until the patient is really willing to have a treatment holiday. And then I, in terms of rechallenge, I generally prefer to have one, if not two, lines of treatment and at least 12 months in between the frontline and the later lines anti-GFR-based therapy to try and maximize the chance to, let's say, let decay the mutant clones and have patients again sensitive to anti-GFR treatment. So there is another question from the audience. I understand that not all oncologists have access to liquid biopsy techniques to guide their anti-GFR rechallenge decisions in colorectal cancer. So in the absence of liquid biopsy, what criteria can they use instead for anti-GFR rechallenge selection?
It is difficult to say if there the question if in terms of the clinical predictor or clinical factor to predict the result in terms of the activity after rechallenge is, I think that it's very controversial. There are some multi-institutional studies that are looking for some clinical predictors, as I mentioned before, NGFR-free interval, for example, or prior lines before rechallenge, or time from the last anti-EGFR first line to disease progression, but not a clear information in terms of the how is the best candidate for this option of rechallenge. So in our clinical practice, I think that it's not clear information, but probably the liquid biopsy, it's the best tool in order to define the option of rechallenge.
All right, so I suppose we have got to the end of this activity. I really thank you, Juan, for all your fantastic insight. I hope you enjoyed this activity, and I really thank you for watching us, and bye for now.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com. Don't forget, there will be a second module in this series that continues to explore current and future perspectives on precision medicine in the treatment of patients with colorectal cancer. So please check back for any updates.